The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another Prog Report Top 5 podcast. Very great episode here for you today. Something a little bit different. We've talked about trying to stretch our boundaries a little bit. And while we're not going to go into doing a Top 5 Motley Crue or anything, we might delve into things that are sort of prog related or prog adjacent, which is a new term that has just been sprung upon me the last few days that I think works in this particular case. But let me welcome our two guests. Jeff Bailey is joining us once again.
Of course. Hello, of course. Everybody.
I had to change it up that time. Well, we'd always like to try and bring on a musician, somebody that, might have something new coming out or something interesting to talk about to join us with this. And really happy to welcome from the Neil Morse Band, Mr. Bill Hubauer.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Bill. Hi, Bill. Thanks for joining us. We have a weird topic today, or maybe not that weird for people listening. We think that the Electric Light Orchestra are very prog related, or ELO, as they're known to most people nowadays. One of my all-time favorite bands, I'm very happy to say, and I think for you, Jeff, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the kind of probably two or three, whenever I first got into music, when I was probably 8 or 9, I suppose, and that was certainly in the UK, ELO were on TV, and, they were in the charts, and them and Queen were probably the two bands that, were my bands whenever I was very young.
I remember, looking back when I was first getting into music really, really young, There's like four bands that I recall listening to the most. I'm sure there were a dozen others, but it was definitely Kiss and Def Leppard at first. I've talked about that. And then Genesis and then ELO. I was obsessed with this band, and I'm a big Jeff Lynne fan, and I love all those records, even the ones that came out in the 80s, and he's released a couple of great new ones. Bill, where do you lie in discovering ELO and being a fan?
Well, I'm really happy that you guys are pretty deep fans, because I'm not quite as deep as you guys, and I'm looking forward to hearing your picks, because then I'll know what I should go check out, that maybe some of the deeper cuts that I might not be as familiar with. There's sort of this concept that I don't know if I've ever heard anybody talk about this, but there's a lot of really, really interesting music, really interesting albums that had I heard them when they came out, I probably would have just been totally in love with them. But then you discover them later in life, and there are various reasons. Sometimes it's the production, sometimes it's just the genre, but you can't get into it as much later. But when, back in the day, had I been more exposed to it, I think I would have been a much bigger fan. And I think for me, ELO definitely falls into that category. There's a lot of songs that I love, but I was never really an album fan for ELO because I just wasn't at the time in my life when I would have been influenced by them. I wasn't listening. I wasn't familiar with them.
Yeah. I hope maybe people that sort of only know this band from, Don't Bring Me Down or Evil Woman or Mr. Blue Sky, things like that. They have like dozens of hits, but if you only know them from that, maybe listening to this podcast, you might realize that in fact, they really were practically a prog band, the first three or four albums. Really long songs, really adventurous things, 12-minute epics. I mean, it was before they got to the pop hits. This was a really experimental band. And yeah. I don't know what songs will come from what era from all of us, but we'll see. But Jeff, I mean, you want to talk about a little bit of a background on ELO so that people that maybe aren't as familiar know who we're talking about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose the history of it is interesting. One of the first actual kind of rock biog books I got was a book about ELO called The Electric Light Orchestra Story. And if you don't know, they originated out of a British band called The Move, who had a run of hit singles in the late 1960s. Blackberry Way, I Can Hear the Grass Grow, Fire Brigade. And they were sort of quite a controversial band. You know, they did things like, you know, bought TVs and smashed them up on stage and this kind of, you know, auto-destruct art type stuff. And but the hits dried up and they, you know, ended up sort of playing the sort of cabaret supper club circuit in the north of England, you know, and all this bizarre hippie wear, and the north of England is sort of quite a conservative place, and they'd get, you know, booed and shouted off stage. And while all of this was going on, Roy Wood sort of dreamed of this notion of the Electric Light Orchestra. And this was even before Jeff Lynne was part of The Move, because he joined sort of in the very latter period of The Move. You know, but the idea was picking up where And the Walrus left off, you know, with the cellos and the horns, and bring all of that in, where maybe the Beatles had gone back after that sort of very experimental phase to sort of Let It Be and, you know, two guitars, bass and drums mostly. And actually what happened was that Jeff Lynne joined, and the three of the four people from The Move, which is Roy Wood, Jeff Lynne and Bev Bevan, the drummer, signed a contract to make albums as a new band with Harvest, which was the EMI label that had Pink Floyd, it had Barclay James Harvest, the Syd Barrett solo albums got released on that. So it was the prog label. And the first couple of albums were pretty, I think it's fair to say, they're pretty hard to listen to be honest, even as an ELO fan. And Roy Wood sort of tired of the sort of shared responsibility. I think the very first hit single they had was 10538 Overture, which was a Jeff Lynne song, which pretty much defined what we know as the ELO sound, and it sort of shifted the balance of power to him. And so Roy Wood went and did his own thing, and I suppose the ELO kind of grew from there. But, you know, very much those early albums were a whole mixture, you know, mixing up things that hadn't really been put together before. And I suppose that's part of the definition of prog rock, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. The first album is especially sort of sonically hard to listen to. It sounds very much like a demo to me. But yeah, then we'll get into it, but the sound evolved and he became a production genius and later on went to produce, you know, everybody. Tom Petty, Brian Adams, Paul McCartney, The Beatles, Roy Orbison, the list goes on and on. And he's just a genius. So we'll get into that. That's a little bit of a history. I want to talk to you, Bill, a little bit about what's going on in your world, of course. The Neil Morse Band is releasing the Great Adventure live in Brno. Comes out in about a month as we're doing this, March 6th. An amazing live release. Comes out on Blu-ray and CD. You know, we want to talk about that a little bit, putting that together, what the tour was like.
Wow, yeah. That was like, coming up on a year ago now already. Oh, so it's amazing. It's hard to believe. I can't believe it. But it was really the last, of course, Similitude Tour, too, was pretty special. The last couple tours have just been so good. Every night, except for technical problems that happened in a couple shows, it was just every night just worked. And it would be really hard to pick a special night out of those runs, one that stood above all the rest because they were all so good. Brno was great. That had a really interesting room there, very curvy, like the balconies had these weird curves, almost like a spaceship or something. It's kind of strange looking. I think you can see some of that in the video. The thing when I saw the the rough drafts or whatever, the rough cuts to approve for the first time, I was really, really happy. I thought, of all the live releases that we've done so far, and it is kind of this, what a weird world that, you know, people expect that there's a live release from every album, you know, I mean, our favorite bands from the 70s, if we got one live album, we were lucky, you know?
Yeah.
So we've done a lot of live albums, and even before the Neil Morse band, you know, there were like Momentum Tour when I was in the band, but it was, you know, Neil's thing. We had stuff from that, but I think this is probably my favorite, because for me, it's the most authentic from as far as the performance goes. There's, you know, there's always the temptation of fixing up things because you think like, oh, this one, I messed up this one part so bad and it's going to just ruin it for everybody. And so you feel like you want to fix it because you don't want anybody to be taken out of the moment because of a mistake. But, you know, I don't think it's a secret that bands do fix up their live recordings. And this one, I just like, you know what, unless it's like, Jeff, it's got to be like my threshold of like, am I going to fix anything?
Right.
Was really, really high. And it was like, it's got to be something bad. So I hardly did anything to it. And so I just was real happy with like, wow, you know, because that's pretty much what it sounded like. And I thought it was a great performance. And so anyway, I feel like it was very authentic and it's a great performance. And, it'll be fun to watch.
I agree. I mean, I'm with you a little bit, sort of where it's the, oh, here comes another live album, right? Of an album I just heard the other day. But there is something about this one. When I listened to this performance again, it just jumps out of the speakers, and the band sound totally in sync, and the songs just sound refreshed again. I mean, it's just really, really great to even just to listen to without watching the video. I think it's just really great. And of course, I want to mention the awesome medley that you guys do for the encore, which if anybody hasn't heard that by now, I'm so excited that it's going to be on record for people to have, because it's just about the greatest thing ever created. I'm dying to know the story behind that.
Well, I'm famously known for hating medleys. and there's number of exceptions over the years of bands that I thought, man, that was really well done. That was a great medley. Because we all, in our minds, we all think we want to hear every song. I want to hear that whole song. But the reality is you know, you can't hear all those songs in one show because it would be, you know, a 6-hour show. But, so Mike had the idea and I was like, oh, I don't know. What sold it for me was, he says, but we'll make it, it'll be chronological, like one thing from every album. And then I was like, okay, there's a concept. I can get behind the concept.
Okay.
You know, so I did a first draft that was like, I was like, you know, it's like 45 minutes long or something. And then we started cutting it. And of course, because I'm trying to sneak in some deep cuts into the first draft, and it's like, nah, you can't do that. You don't want to play this little snippet from the middle of some obscure section of Alive Again, you know, from the Grand Experiment, and it's going to go by too quick. You know, it's out of context. You know, so let's do some of the call, or let's do, you know, so we went back and forth, you know, a bit, and came up with what we came up with, and I was happy with it. And not being typically a big fan of medleys, I thought, okay. And then Christian Rios did that incredible, like, intro. Like, so we did like that sort of we wanted the idea that we were going to rewind
right
from the last song that we played back through to the to Testimony, right? And so I had done this audio montage, and I just sent it to Christian, and he came back with this like rewind video that's like perfectly in sync with that. I couldn't believe he did that. It was amazing.
That is cool. Yeah, he is amazing. You know what? I don't want to give too much away for people that haven't heard of what songs are in it. You know, we'll leave that as a surprise. But
the future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I just, the opening bit that goes into it just lends so great into the second song you go into. You know, that second song sounds like an opener there. It just works so well, all the pieces that how you put them in. So I think that's what makes it special. And you know, and after listening to just one album on that tour, it was a great way to listen to some of the other songs that you guys had put out. You know, it was a nice added thing, which I think was great.
Yeah, and that's always a frustration. I know, like, you want to hear, even if you think the new album is the greatest album ever. How, you know, you don't get very many chances to see the band play live, and so you still want to hear some of the old catalog. You know, you want to hear the classic tunes, when you're playing a double album for the whole show, what can you do?
Right. It's long, and it's tough. I mean, what else is going on in your world? Any other music things you want people to know about? You had the We Came From Space release a year prior to that. That was a great album. You doing anything with them or anything else?
Yeah. So, you know, gosh, I don't even know when we did it now, but it wasn't last year or the year before. Now, we're pretty slow about putting out albums, but the We Came From Space project, for those who don't know, is basically me reconnecting with some high school friends and doing music that was sort of in the style of what we were listening to in high school. So it's some prog, it's some album oriented rock. There's a mix of, even some punkish kind of stuff or new wave kind of borderline kind of stuff. We've done two albums so far with a little bit of a different lineup and different sound between the two, but that's sort of it's just sort of a fun thing. And so the second album that came out last year or the year before, We just decided it was done, and we just threw it up on Bandcamp and released it. And I had no idea who would like it or would care. And we got such a strong feedback from it, we couldn't believe. I mean, it was people just really loved it. And we don't tour yet. We haven't really done much. Just done a few shows around Pittsburgh, where we live.
I really loved that album. That was a great, great release and complete surprise. Anyone expected at that time. So yeah, I hope you guys do some more stuff. That was great. Yeah.
And I think that's, it worked because it was a surprise. No one saw it coming. If we had hyped it,
right,
I think it wouldn't have been as interesting. I think it was more interesting because it just came out of nowhere. But we are working on a new album. We're about half done with it. I'm really excited about it. I think it's an evolution from what we did the last album. So we'll see. No schedules, or don't know yet if it's going to be another independent release or a label release, but I'll talk more about it when we get something going.
Cool.
And any Neil Morse band plans on the horizon or anything? Well,
we've penciled in some time this spring to work on a new album. That's really cool. That's all I know. I can't say anything else. That's it.
All right.
And is that something, is that a process where you kind of, when that starts to appear, you're kind of gathering bits of ideas or?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I have, And then I always have leftover ideas from the last time too that we can simply look at, like, you know, there were songs on both our last two albums that were left over from the previous album. Yeah. So just everybody has, you know, such, there's no shortage of material. So
do you ever, you ever write anything, or have you in the last months or something that, you know, you've written a song or even just a chorus or something, and you're just like freaked out about you, you think it's the most fantastic thing, so you just have to send it to Neil or Mike right away. Like, you guys got to listen to this.
Well, there's a couple of bits on the new Weekend from Space album that I think they would love, and I can't wait to share it, but I don't want to. I have a hard time sharing unfinished ideas. Like, I want it to be, you know, represent what I'm hearing in my head. So I've been holding back sending things to those guys. But there's one I've told Mike a couple of times. Oh, Mike, when you hear this song, you're going to freak out, because I just know. You get to know what they like,
right?
You know, and you know what buttons this is going to push, you know.
That's so cool. That's fun.
Great.
All right, cool, man. Well, that's exciting. Always keep us posted. You know, we're big fans. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. So we're going to do top five ELO songs. As always, we didn't discuss. Could be any eras, whatever. I'm assuming no Jeff Lynne solo stuff, but, you know, I don't know. Jeff always surprises me. You never know what he's going to pick. All right, so Bill, why don't we go with you if you're ready? Your number five choice.
Okay. I'm sure it was hard for you guys to make a list too. It was hard for me. My stuff's going to be more, maybe not so much the deep cuts, but I still love these songs and excited to talk about them. My number five is The Diary of Horace Wimp from Discovery.
Awesome.
This song, you know, that album came out sort of at the end of the disco era. So there's definitely, you know, a lot of that kind of vibe, especially in, I think, the string arrangements or have a little bit of that kind of elaborate sort of grandiose over the top kind of thing going on. But I still think it's really super cool. There's obviously throughout the entire catalog, there's over the top Beatle influences. And I like this one because it's them like stuffing all the stuff that they like about the Beatles into a song as like, you know, like an homage to this and that, and not like, not trying to be like, okay, we want to write songs like the Beatles, because I think some of their songs are like that. I think this is more about these cool production things that they do that are just cool, just for the sake of like, we love this and we're going to put it in a song. And it's a fun story song. And I think, you know, it reminds me of like, you know, Beatles songs, of course, like, you know, Maxwell Silverhammer with like sort of the story kind of thing that's going on. And of course, the whole end section is sort of like the, you know, on the walrus kind of building thing going on and all that. I just think it's a fun song with a fun story, and just, it's goofy. It's just goofy, and let's not take ourselves too seriously, you know. So I just like it.
Just knock on the door. Well, he just stood there mumbling and fumbling. Then a voice from above said, Horace Wimp, this is your life. Go out and find yourself a wife. Make a stand, be a man, and you will have a great life plan. You can do it. Come on, Horace.
Horace met the girl. It's the lyrical twist in it about what is it? It's because it's Horace Wimp, this is your life, go out and find yourself a wife. And then Horace Wimp, this is your wife, go out and find yourself a life.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
It's that,
exactly.
It's the low, you know, the Kinks, Lola. It's, you know, Pictures of Lily by The Who, where you find out that, you know, she's a dead movie star. It's Obladi Oblada, where it's Desmond stays at home and does his pretty face, and Molly's the singer of the band. That kind of homage touch. There is actually a I don't know if you guys know this, and this is where I geek out. Roy says about he never knows what I'm going to come out with. So yeah. You talked about the subtlety of the Beatles tribute. For anyone who has never heard it, ELO made an album called Secret Messages, and originally it was a double album. Mm-hmm. And the record company said, no, it needs to be a single.
Right.
And so they cut a lot of stuff from it. And they recently put it out on vinyl with all of the tracks bar one and that were originally meant to be on it. And the one that they left off is a track called Beatles Forever. And it is, look at it, look up, you can hear it on YouTube, look up ELO Beatles Forever on YouTube. And you can tell why Jeff Lynne doesn't want it released. It's absolutely, it's like there's something about a Beatles song that lasts forever. You know, it's the most cheesy, terrible thing.
I actually haven't heard that. I got to check that out. It's skated by me.
The chorus is just the names of Beatles songs. And it's a really... it's the tribute that went wrong, but of course everything ever is on YouTube, so check that out for a bit of fun.
They did something cool for the release of Discovery back then, which I don't know if a lot of people have ever seen, but they made a video for every song on the album released it as like an hour long show or video something album. Album that you could see, and that who did that back then? I mean, you're talking 1979?
79.
So, that's crazy. And I remember the video for this, which was particularly cheesy. But also the other thing I always thought was funny with this song, at the end, they list off the days of the week in repetition.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but they leave off Saturday because it just didn't fit. So,
that's right.
You know, the syllables, it doesn't work. So it always stuck out to me. It was funny. But I love Friday, that song.
Friday, Sunday.
Sunday. Great first choice. Nice. And not entirely a big hit. So perfect. All right, Jeff, you're up.
Okay, number five. So again, I tried, so many ways you could have taken this. But I thought I would at least pick two or three songs which would demonstrate kind of the prog type credentials. So my number five is Daybreaker from On the Third Day album.
Okay, yeah, you're that is deep.
And again, appreciate, I may be talking about a song that people may not be massively familiar with, but if you listen to this, it's the first track, the first sort of proper album that they recorded after Roy Wood left, and it kind of had Jeff Lynne, Beb Evan, Richard Tandy, who even still plays some keyboards for them, and Mick Kaminsky, the guy with the blue violin. And it's this triumphant kind of fanfare that's a bit like Bach or Handel or something like this, but it's also, and it's got the strings doing all that kind of stuff, and then this mini Moog or synth of some sort doing sort of Keith Emerson type stuff all melded together. There was actually bits of it. I mean, it predates it by probably 3 or 4 years, but there's actually bits of it that you listen to it and go, ELP, pretty much ripped off Fanfare for the Common Man from parts of this, where you can hear the drums and the bass kind of playing that doom 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 type thing. And there's a really where it became their sort of show opener at that time. So there's a live album called, I think, The Night the Light Went Out on Long Beach, which was like a radio broadcast that they stuck out as a live album. And the live version of it is absolutely fantastic. You can just tell how it's the, perfect show opener. So a very prog ELO track.
A couple of things about that album was that the hit from it, Showdown, right, was not was only on the U.S. release on the album. Yeah. Originally, it was just a single. And also, I just learned this, but that Mark Bolan played on the record. Did you know that?
There certainly are songs that he plays on. I'm not sure that they actually made it to the final album, but I know that in some of the reissues, his versions are on. But yeah, there are versions with him playing on it.
That's pretty cool. All right.
So I went back and listened to the first couple albums that I had never really checked out before in preparation for today, just to see what kind of stuff was on there. And I really thought that the third album was pretty proggy. And in fact, that I would say, I haven't discussed this with Neil, but I would say he probably was familiar with this album, because if you listen to New World Rising, boy, it sounds an awful lot like, I'm not even going to say what it sounds like, but if you know his catalog and you listen to that song, there's a section in there. It's like, oh, wow.
I got to pick that out. I guess if I can place it, I never thought of it, but yeah, that could be great.
You'll get homework from this podcast.
That's right. that's cool. All right. I'm going to go. I'm not going too far back. While I do like Third Day and El Dorado, the third and fourth records, I struggle with having a specific favorite song off of those. For me, my fandom really kicks off with the fifth album, Face the Music. And I guess that's when they really started to have some big hits. Evil Woman, Strange Magic are on those. Of course, everybody knows those songs played to death. But the song I'm going to pick is actually Knight Rider, which is, maybe not the proggiest song from a technical level, but just, I mean, there's so many layers of, musical parts, the orchestration and background vocals all over the place, and just so many things going on that if you really dive deep into listening to that song, it is pretty incredible. And it's got a great hook, and it also features, it's one of only a few songs where Jeff Lynne isn't the only person singing lead. The bassist Kelly, is it Grocut? Do you know how to pronounce the last name?
Yeah.
So he sings lead on a part in that song as well. And so I do love this album. One Summer Dream is great. Waterfall is great. Just a fantastic record. It's a great starting point album, I think, for anybody that wants to check out some of the older stuff, but maybe struggles with, the first few records. I think this one is just a home run. Hold on, Knight Rider, baby. Hold on, you're a Knight Rider.
It's a fantastic album, and again, one of those the second vocalist thing played. We've talked about this on a whole lot of the podcast. Kansas doing it, and who was the last one? I can't remember now. But yeah, it was great having that kind of sort of contrast. I mean, they do sound quite similar sometimes.
They do. You're almost wondering if it's a different person or not. But yeah.
Yeah.
Strange Magic is another sleeper favorite of mine.
In fact, whenever. I don't know if you ever heard the ELO part two. Whenever Jeff Lynne moved on, the guys kind of put a sort of touring version together with kind of some of the guys from the band. And yeah. Kelly Grocca pretty much did all the lead vocals, and it was pretty indistinguishable sometimes.
Didn't they get Dave Mason or something? Wasn't he in there? Famous 70s guy that took.
It was Peter. Guy from the Climax Blues Band, Peter Haydock, I think. Mm. Yeah, but they had a lot of people in there. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, cool. Good first round. All right, Bill, you're up. You're number four.
All right. So this is sacrilegious maybe to some, but I'm going to move into the 80s.
I got plenty of 80s coming up, don't worry.
Yeah. Post string section albums. And this really speaks to me, and it's because it came out in 81. This is from what was that album called?
Time.
And it was right around the time when Abacab came out. And I was a real sucker for anything that just had like that eighth note bass, you know, dun, 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 just driving on with the chords changing around it. So the first time I heard Twilight, I was like, oh, this is awesome. And just the way the vocals are produced on that song. And it just scratched that itch because I wanted to hear, you know, more songs like that. And that just that early 80s analog production with just like the droning synth bass note going and with the chords moving over top of it. And I think the verse melody and I think probably the hook, the chorus is probably the weakest part of the song. but the, you know, the verse chords and the melody just worked for me.
I love that album to death. I think it's one of their best albums. And it's a concept record. I mean, so while it's not, again, the thing with their version of being progressive or doing prog rock in a sense was more conceptual always. It wasn't in terms of technicality, but this is a really cool concept record. And they actually have two of them, El Dorado being the first one. But this is all about futuristic stuff and time travel and story. You can sort of kind of piece it together. It's not that well defined, but that's an amazing record and one of my all time favorites.
I think the thing about, I actually was reading up on that album just before and on Wikipedia, and it says that Time was their most influential album, and then in brackets afterwards, as it sometimes does say in Wikipedia, it says citation required. but I think the point of it is that, you know, everything that was going on with, you know, in the UK, the Human League, Ultravox, those kind of synthy bands who also had, you know, were using a lot of drum machines and a lot of that kind of things, whereas sort of Jeff Lynne took all the melodic burly keyboard stuff, but he still had this, you know, massive crashing drum sound, like the start of that song, the kind of the way the phase drums kick right. in, it made it, you know, it took the best of both and blended them together, and you almost didn't miss the strings because it was a brand new thing.
Yeah,
completely cool. Agree.
Yeah, awesome. Yep. Choice. All right, Jeff, you're number four.
Number four, I'm back to Face the Music, and I'm the track after the one that you picked, Roy. So,
okay.
Poker.
Yep. Awesome.
And
that's a very Jeff Bailey song. I could totally.
That's a very. I remember, again, a lot of my ELO came from. I have an uncle who lives in England who was and indeed still is very into them, and we used to go over and stay with him every Easter, and. I would record his ELO albums on the cassette tapes. Sorry, to the artist who I will, but I promise you, I've bought everything pretty much at least once or twice since then to make up for it. But Poker was just, and again, that thing of a brilliant guitar riff, but also, you know, the strings really kicking in. But what I didn't realize about it, back to what we talked about earlier on, was Jeff Lynne doesn't sing lead vocal on it. It's all Kelly, and you know, it's got the, again, Moog arpeggios. It's got the you know, the drop down that happens in the middle, and then it all kicks in again. Just you know, I'll confess, you know, in my tennis racket in front of the mirror, Ur-Guitar days. What was it, Ur-Guitar? Because I was using the tennis racket. You know, Pogger was my favorite one. The one thing that I was always remember about it was that there's a line in it which says, "And get your blood they might," and I thought it was a bad word in the middle of that song because it's sort of get your blood they might. And I always used to have to be really careful playing that around my parents, but then I realized it actually wasn't a bad word after all, so it's good. Yeah, fun. Pogger, so really great. I'm calling on all fours, bang me on lock doors, hey, cross calling too. I know, you know, they know, we all know, everybody's gonna burn down.
That's a good choice. Okay, I'm going to go. My number four. There's very few songs that are straight up massive pop hits that I hook to and cling to as favorites. But I had, of all of their big hits, and I love them. I love Mr. Blue Sky and Don't Bring Me Down and some of those songs. My favorite of the bunch that when they play it live, it just gives me goosebumps always is Livin' Thing. So that's going to be my number four. I think it's in the discussion for me of most perfectly written pop song. The chord sequence and the melodies and how they mesh with each other is just so perfect. It's almost like a clinic in how to write a hook. The entire song is a hook, every last bit of it. And probably very sappy also, but it just is that little, you know, the horn part that kind of flows in there. It's just tremendous. And I think it's just the most perfect song he's ever written from that perspective of like straight up hit single.
Making believe this is what you can see from your worst day.
I get what you're saying. It is, you know, it's a lot of these songs that I kind of glossed over when I was looking down, because at one point or another, you know, the pop tunes, you know, I really liked all of these songs, but some of them, you know, I'm not interested in hearing it anymore. I've heard it enough. So it's hard for me to say, you know, that's going to be on my list of my favorite songs, but that doesn't mean it's a bad song. It just means it was, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I generally 9 out of 10 times I'm with you. I mean, that's generally how we go on this podcast. We almost never pick. I mean, we did a podcast of Queen, and none of us picked Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, so, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
All right, Bill, you're number three.
All right. So fun trivia. When we're writing with Neil Morse Band, I'm always trying to get the guys to put in, we need, I call it the power chord solo, where the song stops and it's just like these power chords playing for just a short break, and then you get back into something, and they never want to do it. But one of the one of the places where my love for that has come from is my number three, which is Do Ya.
Yeah, I knew that you were going there.
And when I was a kid, and I just heard those chords, the opening chords, and then later on in the song, what it would stop and do it again. I was like, ah. You know, I just love those breaks and, you know, stuff like, you know, every band that would do it back in the 70s in Boston, or, you know, even Kansas did a bunch of songs with power chords, so what I call power chord solos. And so that was really cool. But the thing that I loved about it, I was really into, like, you know, the 70s power pop when I was younger, like Sweet, bands like Sweet. And so the stacked vocals on this reminded me so much of, like, songs like Fox on the Run.
Yeah.
You know, or something where you have that power pop vocal stacking that would happen. And then the thing I love about it is the way the bridge breaks down and gets soft. I always liked songs that when the bridge would kind of get softer for a moment and then would kick back in again. And I just think it's perfectly done. It's just such a well crafted power pop song. And I don't know that they really. You could put all of their songs in different buckets. You have, like, you know, the Beatles songs and the maybe the old time rock and roll songs or the Royal Orbison style songs.
Yeah.
But I don't really think, I can't think of any other ones that are like just straight up power pop like this one.
Yeah.
So that's my number three. Love that song.
A good rocker by them for sure.
I think it's sort of cheap. It's like it's sort of, you know, Cheap Trick nearly sort of built on that. I know they were probably around similar sort of time, but it's very much like that. And as you say, there's not a lot of those types of things in their catalog. But no, it was another air guitar tennis racket guitar favorite as well. You know, it's just perfect for that.
Awesome. Cool. All right, Jeff, you're number three.
Number three, I think, Out of the Blue, it was a standout album, and you know, I wanted to pick something from it, and I could have picked any number of things from it. And I just love is it side three, the Concerto for a Rainy Day, that starts with Standing in the Rain and ends with Mr. Blue Sky. You know, that in itself is a kind of a, again, for anyone into prog, if you listen to those tracks as a sort of a 20-minute concept, because that's what they were put together. And again, when I saw ELO, the Standing in the Rain, you know, perfect show opener.
Yeah.
It builds up, and just again the orchestral element. Melded with the band. Yeah, Out of the Blue was probably the last, you know, very, very symphonic, where they had a lot of that symphonic type stuff. And I think that kind of side, that side of the album, was probably, I don't know, I imagine a case of, well, how can we take this idea any further, because we've done, you know, sort of the ultimate. And the fun fact that I found out about this is, if you know the intro, again, if you want to go, in fact, well, you can insert it in here, this little bit, at 1:07, and there's the strings go, and that's Morse code for ELO.
Yeah. Is that for real? They did that on purpose?
Yeah. They did that on purpose. So that's the kind of attention to detail that went into that record. So yeah, Stand in the Rain from Out of the Blue.
That is a cool one. It is an amazing show opener and very cool orchestral instrumental kind of thing that they do. It's awesome. I think that, listen, we'll get to that for me as well, but that album is amazing. All right, so I'm going to go, interesting. We have a tie for another song. My number three is from the Time album, and it was also Twilight that Bill picked earlier. I think I said it, but this album was right there when I was starting to listen to music on my own really young. And this album just really took you to another place. The whole sci-fi storyline and the whole thing, 21st Century Man, which is really cool. I always gravitated to that song. Another song that I really, really like on this album is Here Is the News.
Yeah.
Which I think is just awesome. And it was between that and Twilight for the two. And I almost switched it, but I'm not. I'm going to stick with Twilight just because it is really my favorite song. But the cool part about Twilight is actually also the opening, the prologue with that guy, the electronic voice thing.
So cool.
And it's so neat. And on the Live in Wembley thing that they just released a year ago, they do this song in the middle of the show, and they include the whole opening and the whole thing, which is just really, really cool. So, all right, so we'll go with Twilight off of Time, and I think that I still think this album is so eclectic, so diverse, such genius, and you know, the big hit off of it was actually Hold On Tight to Your Dreams, but which is easily one of my least favorite songs the band ever did. right? It's just I don't even know how it makes sense in this record. But so if you want to revisit this record, but you always hated that song, it's really at the end. So you could listen to the whole thing and end with 21st Century Man, which is a great ending, and just be done. And it's a tremendous record.
Yeah. And that was always my you know, one of the things that sort of kept me sort of out of the ELO spectrum was not that they're bad songs. I was just never really into like that kind of old timey rock and roll, you know, just based on a blues progression kind of a thing.
I don't know how those songs were the hits. It always used to like confuse me. And then on Secret Messages, the one hit was Rock and Roll Is King, which is another kind of, you know, a rockabilly type of thing on an album that is not remotely like that in any other way. And
let me tell you, from this side of the pond, that was a very, very big and a very popular sound at that time. And this is probably one of the things, because I think there's probably a number of bands and artists who, if I mentioned them, you guys probably would never have heard of. But in the early 80s, there was this in the UK, as well as all the kind of Human League and Ultravox and all that kind of stuff. There was this 1950s revival. There was a guy called Shakin' Stevens, right? he was a Welsh Elvis impersonator. and he had, you know, hundreds of number ones doing stuff like, you know, those kind of old, you know, This Old House, and you know, doing the kind of Elvis hip shake. You know, and that was very popular in the UK, and I think that's part of the reason where that came from. And obviously, Jeff Lynne himself is a rock and roller, and my guess is those things. Well, if you think it is quite out of place in time, but it's also probably the only sort of upbeat, happy song on the album. You know, most of it's pretty deep, and you know, in that respect. So I guess, because I can remember, you know, Ticket to the Moon, I mean, that was in the charts in the UK, and I remember the first time hearing it going, oh, it seems totally depressing. I kind of get it now, but sort of back then.
But it's such a cool song. I mean, you know, and it creates such imagery, and it's really cool. It just, it's just weird how Hold On Tight was the hit. And also a weird thing was always the hits were like the last song on the album for three consecutive yeah. albums, which that doesn't happen either. Don't Bring Me Down was the last song on Discovery. Hold On Tight on Time and Rock and Roll Is King on Secret Messages, the final song on the records.
Yeah.
Which is a weird little thing. All right. Bill, you're number two.
All right. So this is the sort of the oddball song for me. I don't know why I like it so much. Like, it's hard for me to explain, but it's a Telephone Line. New World Record. It is. But it's like if I were to list the attributes of the song, I would be like, you know, it's kind of a ballady thing with a, you know, I don't know. I would say that I think this is one of the most emotional vocal performances for Jeff. I think that the opening line of the song is just dripping with emotion. I really believe it, you know, when he's singing. And I think that the chorus melody, except for the turnaround and the chorus, is pretty stock progression, 1-6-4-5 kind of a progression. And for those who are into studying chord progressions, but it's the melody over that is just so incredibly satisfying. I just think it's a beautiful song. And emotional. Just love it. The love you need ain't gonna see through. And I wonder why the little things you find they come in true.
It's one of his best songs. It's great. It's just perfect.
Yeah. And again, a sort of song of almost sort of desperation. You know, it's really, okay. So no one's answering. You know, it's quite, Let It Ring Forevermore, isn't that it? You know, you just, you can tell it's sort of, it must be a kind of the, we're blessed with mobile phones and the internet now, but to me it always struck me as it's the 70s musician on tour, you know, who just can't get through or can't hear from his family.
He just sounds so incredibly lonely. Like, you just hear it.
And lyrically, it's very like simple and relatable, right? It works really well, and just a massive hit from them. From New World Record, which is, I mean, that album's full of hits too. All right, Jeff, you're number two.
I'm going to complete the trilogy because guess what? I've got Twilight 2.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I've been in the last kind of 3 minutes, I've been going through my head because I loved Secret Messages was an album that I loved way more than I loved Time, I have to say. At the time, I really, really enjoyed it. And there's so many tracks on Secret Messages, Danger Ahead and Secret Messages that I loved. But when you have to make a choice in these things, everything that's been said already, the keyboards, the phase drums, the where the vocals go from that, you know, for the falsetto down to the the really rich the dream and nothing that is in between. You know, it's great. And then there's a classical piano break in the middle of it. There's just so much richness in that one song. And again, as I said before, brilliant live. I love those kind of set opener type, you know, but I think at least three of mine are those kind of songs that open a show with type stuff. So Twilight gets unanimous all around.
Very cool. Yeah. You know what he's done to switch the song around, because the beginning is a synth kind of keyboard sound. On live now, when they play it, he does that main riff with electric guitar.
Yeah,
and it totally works. It actually updates the song in a very cool way. I like that. All right, cool. That was surprising that we all had that one of all the songs. All right, my number two, I sort of had it. My top two were defined for me from the minute we decided to do this. You talked about Secret Messages as being your favorite one of your favorite albums. It was for me as well. And my number two is the title track, Secret Messages. I just think it's just the greatest, coolest song. It is a total kind of prog number to me, very futuristic. The whole production, everything, the sounds and the landscape of how everything works. You know, the secret to almost all of his songs is the acoustic guitar. It's almost in every song just strumming acoustic guitar. And then he layers 8 million things over it. But to its core, it's all acoustic guitar strumming songs. And I just love this one. And one of the great joys in a live show that I've ever had was when I mentioned that Radio City show that I flew up to see. He played this song, which was just incredible, unexpected, out of nowhere. A moving stream of information.
This album was never on my radar. Like when I was looking at the albums in preparation, I was like, Secret Messages, what's, I don't know this one. And so I put it on, listened to it, and I listened to it once, and I was just struck by the songwriting. Was like bam, every song was like, wow, that was really good. Wow, that was really good. That was really good. And so I'm looking forward to spending a lot more time with this album going back.
No, that's a really underrated sleeper album. Their sort of popularity was dwindling at this time and overlooked. By then they had a million hits, and it was sort of like he was trying to figure out how to still do this, I think. You know, moving away from the orchestration a lot and trying to figure out what he was wanting to do. I'm sure we're not going to get to it, but the album that came after is Balance of Power. While it's a total pop keyboard synth record, also great. And I like that one too. It's a lot of good songs on that. All right, Bill, you're number one.
All right. And I hate to have to be this guy. Maybe I won't be the only guy, but I had no choice but to go with Mr. Blue Sky.
All right. Someone did.
But and I have a couple of reasons. It's that if it comes on the radio, I'm going to turn it up. I just, you know, and I'm just, I love, again, for some of the same reasons I love Diary of Horace Wimp. It has that on the nose, like we're just gonna unapologetically do this Beatles thing. Mm-hmm. And but they do their own spin on it, you know, the thing that I love most about it is this song, unlike maybe uniquely in their catalog, has spanned generations in a very weird way. I don't know what happened a couple years ago. This song must have been somewhere, and all of a sudden, every kid knew this song. All my kids, like the whole, all the millennials, they all know and love this song. Like my daughter couldn't, like it was on repeat over and over and over again. And I'm not sure how it got on her radar. I don't know where this came from. And so anytime you have a song that's really, even if you're tired of hearing it, it's arguably an incredibly well-written, great, fun song. And if you have that where mom and dad can listen to it right along with their kid, teenagers, and they're just loving it, that's a win for me.
Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Why did we go wrong? Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why you had to hide away for so long. Why did we go wrong?
I love this song. It's not in my top five, but yeah, it checks all the boxes. I mean, it's great. And you're right. One of the things that is appealing about it or endearing about it is that everyone likes it. You can't be in a bad mood and have this song on, yeah. Right? But the thing that I really like and the prog lover in me, the thing that sells me on this song is the ending.
Yes.
The extra part or the coda or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
That part rocks. That's the money moment right there, is that.
Totally.
And so, I love that. Fantastic song. All right, Jeff, you're number one.
My number one, it could be Mr. Blue Sky, but it's not. And again, I knew I'd pick Deep Cuts earlier on. I wanted to pick something that, again, I could say it's certainly one of my favorites. Their highest charting song in the UK, in the US, and Canada, Don't Bring Me Down.
I did not expect that to be your pick.
Well, it's wrapped up in the memory of, again, a big rock song, a song that I played endlessly. It's got that kind of almost sort of piston type kind of rhythm type stuff. I learnt in reading up, it's actually the drum part is actually a drum loop from one of the earlier tracks from On the Run, and they just looped it and kind of wrote a song over it. And it was written, and we've talked about this before as well in some of the podcasts, Carry On Wayward Son, and there was another song recently we talked about. It was written at the very, very last minute because there weren't enough rock songs on the album. And he kind of knocked this one out, took a drum loop from another song, wrote a song over it, sung and had this nonsense grouse that we all know in the chorus, and just, left it how it was, and it became one of their biggest hits. And it's just, again, a kind of feel-good, brilliant pop song. I can't say much more about it than that.
They almost have a, it's almost like a checklist of songs you need to close out a show. And they have like, the last four songs typically have been Telephone Line, so you got the big ballad, Turn to Stone, to sort of like, upbeat rocker.
Disco.
Don't bring Me Down, which is the We Will Rock You, Stomp Your Feet, And then Mr. Blue Sky, the big grand ending where everybody's singing. And those four in consecutive order are just like a barrage of hits. Yeah. And you got one of each of everything you need at the end of a show to sort of close it out, which that's what Don't Bring Me Down is. It's great. It's a great live song.
Now, Now, Bill, I've got a question for you about this. In the context of this song, what's the significance of me going moo?
Don't bring me cows. I'm associated with a Christian parody band called Apologetics who sets kind of their tagline for a long time was Weird Al meets Billy Graham. You know, so they would take you know, scriptures and Bible verses or whatever, you know, stories, and put them to as parodies, pop songs, and frequently very, very, very witty and very well done. And so there's a one called "Don't Bring Me Cows" that was talking about sacrifices or something. I forget which scripture that was. That's what he's talking about. But yeah, it's fun.
That's funny.
And of course, it's "Don't Bring Me Cows." Instead of the goose, there's a big cow. And the album that it's from is called Recovery, and has the guy in the cover holding a Simon.
Yeah.
So, you know, remember the Simon? Remember the multicolored four quadrant? You're probably too young to remember that, Roy.
I know Simon. Come on.
Yeah. So, well, you know the Discovery album. Covers the guy holding the yellow spaceship. Well, in the cover, he's holding us.
Right.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's another one to look up on YouTube.
But my favorite part of "Don't Bring Me Down." I mean, that's like, who doesn't, you know? You got to love that song. I mean, the hand clap solo. Come on, Who doesn't clap? Who doesn't clap along with that? Who doesn't clap along with that? Everybody? Does.
You're right. You do. All right, I guess I'll close out with my number one, which was an easy pick for me because it's been my favorite song by them forever. It's from Out of the Blue, Wild West Hero, this song just gets me. I just love the whole thing, the epicness of it, the whoa, whoa, whoa part, as it just keeps building and building and building and gets higher every single time. And it's just tremendous. I just think it's so cool. And then even cooler is the inexplicable Western piano that gets into the song for no reason, which is total prog to me. Like, that part doesn't make sense at all in that song, except because he's talking Wild West Hero and it creates a whole picture of it. I just love, when they do the acapella breakdown in the middle, and then the music comes back in and just keeps building and doing this epic grand ending. It's very Neil Morris Band epic ending. It's the similar kind of thing to me. That's my favorite thing in all of music, is when you can do these big epic, you know, grand endings with orchestras and strings and harmonies, and just always appeals to me. I just love that song.
It always reminded me. I love that song too. It reminds me, whenever I hear it, I always think of Cowboy Star from Ambrosia off of Somewhere
Under
Travel.
One, yeah.
With the, cause it had like that kind of cowboy music break in the middle of it. And it's just incredible.
Yeah, I'll check that out. That's very cool. All right. Well, guys, I think we did, this was actually a lot of fun, and we covered, Bill, you brought the hits, so that's good. We needed to throw those in. And Jeff, you surprised us all with "Don't Bring Me Down."
I always like to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And we got Twilight on three of them, so that's very cool. All right, so hopefully you guys stuck around and enjoyed a little bit of ELO. Maybe learned something about this band that you didn't know. And of course, don't forget the Neil Morse Band, the Live in Brno set is out on March 6th, and a couple of videos from it are already online. Then Welcome to the World and Dark Melody. You can check that out and see what it looks like and sounds like. And Bill, man, great to have you and doing this with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks. Yeah, anytime.
Yeah.
Great. All right. And don't forget. Thank you. All our other podcasts and everything are online. Oh, we just launched a top 30 albums from 2000 to 2019, the last 20 years, which is a good list to look at, learn about some records you might have missed, or yell at us for albums we forgot to include. And Similitude of a Dream, Bill, I don't know if you saw it, but it is at number five.
Thank you. Wow. Awesome.
Yeah. And all right. We'll see you guys soon.
Cool.
Bye. Thanks. Bye. Oh, I wish I-